Days of racing over three separate visits to Williams Grove in central Pennsylvania. And last night, local high school bowling teams began their seasons. The Butler boys and girls swept Mars 7-0. Butler junior Mercedes Belch led all bowlers with a 5-55 series. Butler freshman Chris Huff led with a high game of 223 at Mars Lanes. The Armstrong boys defeat Penn Hills 5-2. Armstrong girls win 7-0. North Allegheny sweeps Shaler. The NA boys win 7-0. The girls winning 5-2. And basketball season will be kicking off this week. In fact, you can catch the Knock Knights tomorrow afternoon beginning around 4:50 on WISR 680. That's sports. I'm Bob Cupp reporting.
Cloudy sky today, high just about 31 degrees. A chance of snow showers, although there are a few snow flakes falling right now this afternoon. So we may just be in that little time period where we're going to get some snow showers from here on in. A low tonight down to about 22, and then some snow showers expected on Friday as well. A high of 30 on Friday, a low down to 20. Then just some clouds on Saturday afternoon with a high of 28, but we'll likely end the day and lead ourselves into Sunday with a few snow showers. Once again, a low on Saturday night down to 19. And then we're into Sunday with a cloudy day. We have 28 right now in downtown Butler. I'm Tracy Morgan in the Nexteer Bank studios of WISR 680 AM. News time is 12:31. Dave Malarkey's up next with It's Your Turn. Thanks for joining us and have a good day.
And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn. Weekdays from 12:30 to 2 on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn. 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Well, good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the Thursday. Thursday already? December 8th already? Edition of It's Your Turn. We have a good program today. We have some open talk time to begin with. We're going to be talking to a couple of very prestigious historians and authors a little bit later on the program about Pearl Harbor. We'll get to that in just a moment or so. And finally on the program today, we'll be chatting with Dr. Vera Teller. She's not an MD. She is a professor, college professor. And she has some advice for not only college students, but parents of college students about how you should start very early making career plans. Not to your senior year of college, but much, much earlier. It's good advice, I think, and it's why we scheduled a chat with Vera Teller today. Good advice with the holiday break coming up. Some students, I would imagine, are coming home pretty soon. Depends on the schedule at particular schools. But certainly they'll all be coming home very soon for a holiday break or semester break. So anyway, that's coming up later on the program today. Along about 1 o'clock or so, we're scheduled to talk today with Anthony Summers and Robin Swan. They are historians and authors, Pulitzer Prize-nominated authors. They're really, really good. And they've written a new book about Pearl Harbor. Now, you know, there are a ton of books about Pearl. And there's been a lot of stuff on TV, radio, newspapers, magazines, past few days, because we had the 75th anniversary of the attack on Pearl Harbor yesterday. In fact, Anthony Summers and Robin Swan were on national TV this past weekend. And I heard about their interview, and I said, wow, is it even possible for me to get a hold of them and get them on? And son of a gun, I was able to. So we'll be chatting with them today. Here's the deal. Certainly we'll ask them about Pearl Harbor and the attack and so on a little bit, but the big angle that they take is what happened to the admiral who headed up the Pacific Fleet, the United States Pacific Fleet, after the attack on Pearl Harbor. he got drummed out. I mean, in effect, got drummed out of the Navy. He was the fall guy. And Anthony Summers and Robin Swan argue in their book that this is an absolute injustice, that it was not his fault. Plenty of blame to spread around if you're going to spread around blame for how the United States could be taken by surprise by the Japanese. So I'm anxious to talk to them. They'll be with us a little bit later on the program today. If you saw them on TV over the weekend, stick with us today. As I mentioned, open talk to begin with, phone number 283-2525. I had the great honor yesterday. And by the way, I thank Tyler Friel for sitting in for me here on the program yesterday. And that's because I had the great honor of emceeing the program, Pearl Harbor Remembrance Day program here in Butler. It was held yesterday during the noon hour at Diamond Park. Sponsored by VFW Post 249 and the Butler County Veterans Services Department. And, wow, what a wonderful program it was. We had the Marine Corps League Bantam Detachment 743 on hand. We had a rifle salute, presenting the colors in uniform, of course. Very sharp. It's been a while since a lot of those guys have been in service, but they're looking good. And we had a wonderful speaker, Staff Sergeant, former Staff Sergeant, U.S. Army, Daniel Zarnik. And I met Dan yesterday, World War II veteran. He was the guest speaker at the event in Diamond Park. And what a guy. What a guy. He, not only did he serve in World War II in combat, he also served in the Korean War. In fact, he was called back twice by the U.S. Army. That'd be tough, huh? He told yesterday, by the way, he spoke without notes. This is incredible. This is a World War II veteran. And he's standing there at our lectern yesterday speaking without notes for, I don't know, 15 minutes. Wonderful, wonderful talk. Talked about his being at Utah Beach, Normandy, during World War II. Invasion. Also, he was in the Battle of the Bulge in Luxembourg a little bit later that winter. Well, and then Korean War after that. And he's just one heck of a nice guy, too. His daughter, Maureen, was there, too. I met. It was very inspiring to see, shake hands with, and listen to Dan Zarnik yesterday. And I do want to mention, too, Hannah Bossinger is a student at Carson City High School. She was on hand to sing. At the program, she sang the national anthem and then led us all in God Bless America. What a voice. What a voice. Amazing. Hannah Bossinger. So anyway, if you want to comment on that, 283-2525. We'll open up the phone lines right now. 283-2525. Pearl Harbor Day yesterday. I saw some of the television coverage. It's terrible to watch, even though you know what happened. When you see those ships ablaze in the harbor at Pearl, and the video that was not, wasn't a video, it was film. We didn't have video back in those days. The video that was shot of the oil burning and the black smoke and the death and so really, really horrible, horrible. Okay, let's go to the phones. 283-2525, our number, open talk. Hi there, caller. This is Dave Malarkey. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
You're speaking to me?
Yes, I am. Yes, hi.
I just wanted to tell you, speaking of Pearl Harbor,
mm-hmm.
My grandfather worked down at Armco at the time, and he said the next day, that Monday, you know, the entrance to Armco, and for months after that, but the next day and for months after, you know, the entrance to the Armco plant there in Lindora, I can't remember the name of the road, but there was a red brick building,
mm-hmm.
a little red brick building, guardhouse, but there was a guy standing guard outside there with an old World War One carbine.
Wow.
As if Butler was going to be bombed next.
Never heard that story before. That is fascinating.
My grandfather told me that. Yeah.
That is fascinating.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, crucial industry, steel industry. I mean, that's a great story. Wow.
Yeah. And one other thing, I was just wondering, you know, the whole country knew Roosevelt was going to make a speech and we were going to war and there was a national emergency. I wonder if school was canceled that Monday or whether anybody went at the time.
Mm. If anybody knows that or remembers that, I would love to talk to them. Give us a call at 283-2525.
Okay.
You're correct on that.
I just wanted to tell you that about the old entrance to the Armco plant.
You're correct on the dates, of course. I mean, the days. Pearl Harbor was attacked on a Sunday, December 7th,
in
1941. And I tell you what, great call, my friend. I didn't even think about the next day being a school day. Did kids go to school that day?
I was wondering whether most kids stayed home, especially high schoolers.
Yeah. Oh,
you know.
Great call. We'll see if we can get the answer to that. Thanks very much.
All right.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Yeah, great caller there. Yeah. Interesting questions. 283-2525 is our number. If anybody can help us on either of those questions, 283-2525. Hi, caller. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hi.
Hello. Hi.
I just tuned in.
Yes, hi.
And I was 14 at that time.
Mm-hmm.
I do not remember if they closed school. Mm. I was not in Butler at the time, but I don't remember whether they closed school or not.
So you would have been probably junior high school, I guess, huh? 14?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Or if they called it junior high school back then, I don't know.
Yes, they did. Yeah. Yes, we had junior high school.
I would imagine that for a lot of kids, they didn't go. I mean, the country was just in an absolute turmoil after that, you know?
Mm-hmm. It was. Yeah. But I remember, well, at that time, we didn't have TV, of course, and we had newsreels in the movies.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember seeing newsreels of a football game, I guess it was, somewhere. And during the game, they announced that Pearl Harbor had just been bombed. And I think they said that the country was now at war. And everybody had to return to their post, no matter what their leave status was.
Mm-hmm.
And half of the stadium just up and ran out of the stadium.
Wow. Yeah, that's the way. When you said you didn't have TV, nobody had TV. There wasn't TV in 1941. And the newsreels when you went to the movies were a way of catching up on video news. But of course, they were always a week behind because you know that was film, not instant. It had to be developed. It wasn't like today when you got video.
Right.
And by the time they shipped it to the theaters, it was usually a week behind. But those were fascinating films. Fascinating film.
Yes. Well, I don't know if they have any of those available now that maybe they were showing them, but that sight of all those men, primarily men, getting up and leaving that stadium was just something shocking.
Oh, that's a video that I've never seen before. That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thanks for sharing with us, and it was nice, very nice to talk to you today.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye-bye. 283-2525. There's another fascinating local historical tidbit, isn't it? Thank you. Hi, caller. This is Dave Malarkey. Go right ahead. It's your turn. You're on the air.
Hi, Dave.
I
recall the day very well. We were at my cousin's christening. She was born on November the 7th. And I just had a Christmas card from her today saying, you know, I'm 75 now. And I thought, yep. And on Pearl Harbor Day, we were at your house. You were being christened, or it was after church kind of thing, a little party. And we had come out the front door, and the neighbors were all out because they had just heard on the radio that Pearl Harbor was bombed.
Wow.
And, so that's something that stays in your mind, because I was, like I said, I was 10 years old. And I was just talking about it with my son on our way to Butler yesterday, because we went in I call from the Heights to you quite often because I enjoy your program and it keeps me in touch with what's going on. Well,
that's good to know.
It's just one of those things where we moved down here because my husband got a job teaching at Ben Harbrack High School. And so our family was all, you know, still in Butler. Yes, I lived on Bessemer Avenue, the street above Armco.
I was gonna mention to that gentleman that I thought the name of the street was Bessemer, but I wasn't sure.
Bessemer Avenue was Standard Avenue, now led right to the gate.
And wasn't there a lower street, though, called Armco Drive?
No, that was Standard Avenue.
Oh, okay.
Down there, along the fence that ran from... you were talking about the Picklegate Crossing. I remember that very well, kind of thing. But that was named after, you know, the pickling area there in the steel mill. I lived right on Bessemer, just a half a block up from the main office, where I ended up working for the manager after I graduated from high school, training department, and then the manager. In fact, at that time, it was the Cold War, and I actually had to have, working in the manager's office, and the FBI fingerprinted me.
Wow.
So, yeah, that was one of the things. But back to the Pearl Harbor, it was quite a shock, and of course we all listened to our radios very carefully. However, somebody can correct me, but I do not remember schools being closed. I can't attest to the high school, of course. I went to Lindora Elementary School, and indeed we did go to school.
Well, keep in mind, too, that was back, you know, today we're used to, you know, schools are closed for any number of reasons.
As soon as you said that, Dave, I thought, no, Dave, they did not close school. It didn't matter if the snow was up to your waist, because we tried, Bessemer Avenue was at the bottom of the hill, and then you had to cross Penn Avenue, and then go up the hill and get to Kohler Avenue, and then keep on going until you got to Lindora School, which was, you know, way up at the top of the hill. No, schools were not canceled because of snow.
That was a different time.
It brought such a smile to my face. I mean, as I said, we were in Butler yesterday. My parents and grandparents and my Uncle John, who was killed, he was trained to be a bombardier. He was just promoted to second lieutenant and was supposed to go over, for World War II. But his training plane crashed. So we were there decorating the graves, and I was recounting to my son this, you know, Pearl Harbor, and remembering exactly where I was and what happened. Those things stay with you.
Yeah.
And then I said, unlike the wars we are engaged in today, everybody was a part of it. My uncle was the first non-combatant killed, but I can't remember the young man's name who lived catty-corner from us on Bessemer Avenue. His last name was Kozer. I'm not sure his first name was Michael, but he was the first one killed in combat, as far as I remember.
Well, gosh, thanks
then.
For appreciate it you sharing.
You do kind of remember those special things when they come to mind. But and the gentleman was correct about Armco. The gate there was closely guarded. As I said, I could walk to work from my house. My dad worked in the coal mill. My husband's dad worked. You know, it was kind of a family thing. But everybody took part in helping out at that time. Collected kids went around with wagons collecting tin cans and things, you know, for the war effort.
Well, thanks so much for taking a few minutes to call us today. It was just super to talk with you, really.
I enjoy your program so much because, while I don't live in the past, so to speak, I do like to hear about people and things that are going on in Butler. I had the opportunity, as we drove in yesterday, to see two of the murals that were painted on the building. And when you talk about the Miller Shoe Store, I got my first pair of shoes at Miller's, Jim Chiprian's. These bring back a lot of wonderful
good memories, huh?
Yeah. Absolutely, Dave, and I'm looking forward to picking up one of those calendars that you talk about.
But, all right. Well, listen,
nice to talk with you. Oh, thank you for your program, Dave. Really, truly enjoy it.
Only because of people like you that's good. Thank you. Let's go to the next caller here, 283-2525. Hi, caller. This is Dave. Thanks for your patience. I know you've been waiting a while. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
That's all right. I've got several things.
Sure.
Talk about snow.
Mm-hmm.
Where I lived in Nixon, it was out of the range of the standard school buses. And they had to send one out from Butler, bus, Harmony Short Line bus.
Okay, yeah.
And the snow, as I recall, it was about 6 or 8 inches deep, and bus didn't come. And I said, well, I don't know about you guys, but I'm going back home.
And you did, huh?
I did. Another thing, in the Korean War, as I recall it, there were 63,000 men killed there.
I do not, off the top of my head, know the number of fatalities in Korea. I know that it was a cold and bloody war, I can tell you that.
It was either 63,000 or 36, but I'm pretty sure it was 63. Come to the
your final point.
Final point, yeah. I was in a church out in Meridian, and they had the radio on. It was a dinner, Sunday night dinner, and all of a sudden they broke in and said that the Japanese had invaded Pearl Harbor.
Mm. It's funny, so many people that I've talked to are either at church or had just come from church. One of our earlier callers, two or three callers ago, said she had, you know, they'd been to church and come home. Oh, it was a christening in the family after church, and they'd come home and heard the news. Our guest speaker yesterday at Diamond Park at the Pearl Harbor Remembrance Day program, Dan Zarnick, he said the same thing. He had been to church. He said they'd come home from Mass that day, Sunday. And, of course, our time was, I don't know, 5-6 hours different from Hawaii. So it was early afternoon here whenever the attack occurred, even though it was 8 o'clock in the morning in Hawaii. And he said that's when we found out about it, that afternoon after we'd come home from church. Wow.
It was probably around 6 or 7 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
I was out there in church in Meridian.
Yeah. Well, thanks for sharing with us, my friend. I do appreciate. Thanks for joining us. It was nice to talk to you today.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be able to talk with you.
Oh, no, I thank you. Thanks very much. Bye-bye now.
Goodbye.
283-2525, our number. Nice gentleman there. Let's go to this line next. Hi, caller. Dave here. Go right ahead.
Hi, Dave.
Yes, hi.
I'm in the car, so I hope you can hear me okay.
Okay.
I was 4 years old, and I grew up in Brady's Bend, and they had a military guard on each end of the bridge going into East Brady.
Wow.
I don't know how long after Pearl Harbor that happened, but that's my recollection of the war. Having to stop going both directions, the guard could stop you, and they had a little guard shack there, and check you out every time you cross the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And then later during the war, they had a blackout drill every so often. And a guy would come around with a white hat on and check every house, make sure you had your lights turned out or you had the windows blacked so that there was no light shining out into the at night.
Mm-hmm.
Those are two recollections of the war.
When we look back on this, you know, some people might say, well, I was silly or overreaction or whatever. I was watching a TV program yesterday in the late afternoon about Roosevelt. And as soon as Roosevelt heard about the attack, it was about, I think, 2 o'clock in the afternoon when he got the word at the White House. He immediately called his secretary because he knew he was going to have to address Congress the next day. And they started writing the speech that he eventually gave, you know, this day we'll live in infamy. Are you still there?
Yep, I'm here.
Okay, good. Yep. But at any rate, according to this TV program I was watching, Roosevelt, they didn't know if there was anything else that was going to happen. Roosevelt had gotten a call from the governor of Hawaii, and as he's talking to Roosevelt, he said, "They're coming back. There's planes circling overhead. They're coming back." And Roosevelt didn't know whether to believe this guy or, you know, whether he was nuts or what it was. Well, it turns out it was American planes. You know, the Japanese were long gone. They'd flown back to their carriers. The attack lasted less than 2 hours. Not only had they flown back to their 6 aircraft carriers, the aircraft carriers had turned around and they were already steaming back to Japan. But we didn't know that. Roosevelt was afraid there was going to be an attack on the west coast of the United States. And so they were, you know, when you hear about putting armed guards at Armco, or your story of armed guards at both ends of the East Brady Bridge, that's perfectly understandable when you realize that they had no information at that time. They didn't know what was going to happen.
Yeah. I'm just wondering if they did that for every bridge in the country.
Wouldn't surprise me. Wouldn't surprise me. Yeah. Thanks, my friend. Thanks.
Yes, sir. Thanks, Dave.
Thanks for calling. I'm glad your cell phone held out for us there sometimes when you're on the road. You know, the signal goes in and out, so I was afraid we lost him there about halfway. By the way, another interesting story that I found out yesterday, Roosevelt's speech, in fact, I mentioned this in my remarks that I gave yesterday up at Diamond Park, he changed the wording of that speech at the last minute. It originally, and I don't have it in front of me right now, but it was originally said, December 7th, 1941, a day that will live in world history. And that's actually the way the speech was typed up. And at the last minute, Roosevelt scratched out world history and in pen wrote in infamy. And so the speech became December 7th, 1941, a day that will live in infamy. And that change, that last minute change that he scratched out and wrote in, it made the speech. You know, the speech is one of the most famous speeches of all time. Fascinating story. Let's go back to the people. It's open talk here, 283-2525. Hi, caller. This is Dave Malarkey. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hi, Dave. I was 11 years old when the war started,
mm-hmm.
and my father worked for the Bessemer and Lake Erie Railroad. And I don't know why, but in the winter, when it was really bad, he wasn't on the train. He walked the Pickle Gate crossing with a loaded gun.
Hmm.
He guarded the Pickle Gate.
You know, I saw a picture, and I think it's a picture in the Butler County Historical Society's calendar that I was talking about just last week with Pat Collins when she was here. There are several pictures of that Pickle Gate railroad crossing. This is before the Pickle Gate Bridge was built, you know, the big bridge that...
Yes.
Because it used to be, you came down the hill from... the Pullman office building there, and you went down the hill the whole way to the creek, and you crossed a little, almost a one-lane bridge there, and then went back up the other side into Bradenville. So, and there were 3 or 4 pictures there, and I'm almost positive that there were they wouldn't have been guardhouses, but you know,
two little shacks,
the railroad. There would be a conductor there or a signalman or something, you know, that would come out whenever there was a train and wave a lantern or something. You know what I'm talking about?
Well, I don't know about that, but I know Daddy, I guarded that bridge, and I guess it would be the railroad that he would be guarding, but it would probably be because of Armco and Pullman.
Yeah, well, the railroad tracks, several sets of them, by the way, ran right next to the bridge. We're talking about the old...
I was never there, but I know this is what my father did in the winter months during the war.
You might want to pick up a copy of that calendar and check it out. That might be an interesting thing to put in your memory bank. Now, wait a minute. I was taking notes here. You said you were 11 years old?
Yes.
Do you remember if you went to school the next day?
I don't. I don't remember, but I'm sure we did.
Yeah. I mean, it's a silly question. If somebody asked me what I did, you know... Okay, Dave, you were 11 years old. What did you do the next day? I'd say, what are you, nuts? How can I remember that?
I don't remember.
I have no idea. Well, gosh, thanks for sharing with us. Wonderful story about your dad standing guard with a gun at the railroad crossing.
Yes.
Wow.
Loaded gun.
Yeah. Thanks, my friend. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Aren't these wonderful stories? Wow. I mean, you can hardly imagine the state of, I don't want to say terror, but the state of fear, of concern that we had immediately after Pearl Harbor. Hi, caller. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hi, Dave. April 5th, they bombed Pearl Harbor on December 5th. December 22nd, they were still pounding on the hull of the Arizona, letting people know that they were still trapped in there.
There was another ship, too, and I saw a picture of this yesterday. Was it the Oklahoma that capsized or the Utah? I don't remember. We had eight battleships at Pearl. But same thing. It had flipped over. They knew that there were sailors inside because, you know, they could hear them. And they were scrambling to try to cut a hole in the bottom of the ship to get to them. Wow. What a horrendous.
What a way to go.
What a horrendous feeling that must have been. Yeah.
Yeah. You're not going to believe this, Dave.
What's that?
Did you read about that, Jim, that telescope they're going to send up, Jim Webber telescope?
I did not, no.
It's to replace the Hummel?
No.
There are so many things that can go wrong. This is going to be in the 2018. They're going to send it up. The Hummel's 12 feet in diameter. This is 21 feet in diameter. It has to come apart and put it to assemble itself out in space.
Well, the Hummel, they 3 or 4 years after it was up there, they had to send a crew up to fix it. Remember that?
Yeah.
They sent a ship up and intercepted it and fixed it and whatever.
This is a good article. It's in Post-Gazette. It's Sunday, November the 27th. It's under Health and Science. It's a very good article. It tells you what. There's so many things that could go wrong. It's $3.8 billion. And did you hear about the Kennedy assassination? We're going to have a closure on it.
I'll believe that when I see it.
Well, there's a CIA double agent come out, and a wannabe, he was in the gangsters or whatever, and they're both going to write a book that's called The Assassination Team.
Hmm.
And it tells it like it is, of what really happened.
I'll watch for that one.
Yeah, Assassination Team.
Got to move on, my friend. I've got guests coming in here pretty quickly.
Thank you, Dave.
Sure, I appreciate your call. Thank you. I think we have time for, we have another caller who's been waiting patiently, and I want to get to that person. Hi, this is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
I was in seventh grade on Pearl Harbor Day, and I went to Butler Catholic School, and we definitely had school the next day.
Well, maybe for the kids, they were just trying to, keep them as calm as possible.
I don't know, but I do know we had school.
Uh-huh. Well, thanks for sharing with us. Seventh grade, so you'd have been like, 12, 13 years old, something like that?
Yes, about 13.
Wow. Thanks for taking the time to call. Mm-hmm. I really appreciate it. Thanks.
Have a good day.
And you. Bye-bye. These great memories here. My goodness, what great calls we had today. We need to take a break, but in just a couple of minutes, we are due to hook up by telephone. Our guests are not here. I'm not sure. They may be in Ireland. They live there. Anthony Summers and Robin Swan. They are historians and writers. They've written about 9/11. They've written about the hunt for Osama bin Laden. They've written about Richard Nixon. They've written a lot about American history. They have a new book out. It's called A Matter of Honor. It's about Pearl Harbor. Not so much. I mean, I certainly cover the. They cover the attack and the tragedy and everything like that. The matter of honor has to do with the admiral who was the head of the Pacific Fleet at Pearl, and he took the fall for Pearl Harbor. They blamed it on him in so many words, and most experts say unfair, absolutely unjust, and they're still trying to restore his honor. So what's the story behind this? Well, we'll find out. Anthony Summers and Robin Swan, they'll both be joining us on the telephone coming up here on It's Your Turn next. One of our sponsors on the program today, Society of St. Vincent de Paul here in Butler. By the way, did you know that every day is a sale day of some sort at the Society of St. Vincent de Paul thrift store in the Greater Butler Mart? Yeah. Store hours, by the way, at 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday is Senior Day, 50% off clothes, shoes, linens for those 50 or older. Tuesday, Kids Day, 50% off kids' clothes and shoes and games and toys. Wednesday is Ladies' Day, 50% off ladies' clothes and shoes and linens. Thursday, Upscale Day, 50% off their upscale clothing and fashions and purses and belts. Friday, Men's Day, 50% off clothes, shoes, and specials on electronics, too. And then on Saturday, it's the sale tag of the week. Items on the sale tag rack are only 99 cents. Buy one, get the second one for 49 cents. Every day is a sale day of some sort. And you can help support the good work of the Society of St. Vincent de Paul by donating unwanted and unused items to the Society of St. Vincent de Paul thrift store. They'll sell them there. A lot of people can put them to good use. They maybe couldn't afford otherwise. But the best part of all is all of the proceeds from the operation of the thrift store go into funding the St. Vincent de Paul Food Bank and their client aid program. So it's win-win, win-win. So if you're able to, think about it. It's very easy to donate items there. There's plenty of free parking right at the door, the Greater Butler Mart there, about three or four doors up from the Friedman store there. And the drop-off bin is right inside the front door. So, I mean, it literally takes seconds. Society of St. Vincent de Paul, we stand the tallest when we stoop to help others.
Winter is just around the corner, and with it comes shorter days and longer nights. If you are a Central Electric Cooperative member, now is the time to take advantage of our outdoor lighting program. For as little as $8.50 a month, that's just pennies a day, we will install and maintain your light, giving you peace of mind through these cold, dark winter nights. We take pride in knowing your home, barn, business, and parking lots are illuminated with our outdoor lighting. For more information on brightening your long winter nights with our outdoor lights, call 1-800-521-0570. That's 1-800-521-0570. Or visit our website at www.central.coop. That's www.central.coop. This is Chris Panning with Central Electric Cooperative, energizing our communities with the cooperative difference. Central Electric Cooperative is an equal opportunity provider and employer.
We have a wonderful opportunity today, listeners, here on the It's Your Turn program on WISR. And if you're just joining us today, welcome. My name is Dave Malarkey. We are talking with the co-authors of a new book on Pearl Harbor. And, of course, we're marking the 75th anniversary of the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor. The title of the book is A Matter of Honor, Pearl Harbor, Betrayal, Blame, and a Family's Quest for Justice. The authors are Anthony Summers and Robin Swan, and we have them both on the line with us here today. Anthony, Robin, nice to have you with us today.
Thank you so much.
There have been a lot of books written about Pearl Harbor down through the years. Actually, there have been quite a few out this year, marking the 75th anniversary. Yours is a little bit different, though, right? You're taking a specific look, Anthony, at one phase of this story?
Well, we did take a special focus, and for a curious reason. You know, our last book was about the 9/11 attacks, which is, of course, the only other occasion, except Pearl Harbor, when the United States was attacked with terrible casualties and great loss by an enemy on its own territory.
Mm-hmm.
And as we were coming out of the book on 9/11, we made a phone call completely by chance on a completely different subject to a former FBI agent in the United States. And at the end of the conversation, he said, you know, I was a little disappointed you were calling me on this obscure FBI matter because I sort of hoped you were calling me about my grandfather. And it seemed very strange to us, and we said, your grandfather? And he said, yes, he was commander-in-chief of the U.S. Fleet in the Pacific in December 1941, and that was Admiral Kimmel, the then hugely distinguished admiral in charge of not only the Pacific Fleet, but by title in charge of the entire U.S. Navy seagoing seagoing ships, and he was made to bear the brunt of the blame for the surprise at Pearl Harbor. And thus prompted, we started digging and investigating, and we found that it should not have been so, that it was, as Vice President Joe Biden has quite recently called it, perhaps the greatest injustice in U.S. military history.
Wow.
And that has taken us down an investigation for the last 2.5 years.
Did you know anything about Admiral Husband Kimmel at all before you just almost by happenstance bumped into his grandson?
Well, I think that we, rather like a lot of Americans, had read some of the reports over the years, both vilifying Kimmel and some of those that sought to defend him. So we had that as a starting point, but there was so much out there, so much of it conspiratorial, that needed to be weeded through before we could get to any of the new evidence or the truth about Pearl Harbor.
And by the way, Robin, Admiral Kimmel did become the scapegoat for this. I mean, he was drummed out of the Navy, wasn't he?
He was indeed. And one of the things that we found most disturbing was the way Kimmel and Short were railroaded into retirement by their vilification after Pearl Harbor. A new document we found, the transcripts of telephone conversations between admirals in Hawaii and Washington discussing how Kimmel's sought-after request for retirement had been achieved. And we print those transcripts for the first time in our book. Not the way
they were manipulated into retirement.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Not the way that an honorable man should be treated.
Now, by the way, folks, in case you're not familiar with our guests, Anthony Summers and Robin Swan, they are dedicated researchers. They've written about a lot of other subjects. For heaven's sakes, they are Pulitzer Prize finalists, for goodness sakes. So I didn't want you to get the wrong impression that they were somebody, you know, trying to climb on the bandwagon here for the 75th anniversary of Pearl Harbor. Anything but. However, I'm sure that there are people, Anthony, who say to you, how many books have been written about Pearl Harbor? Could there possibly be anything new? You've actually run into that sort of a reaction on some of your other books, haven't you?
Yes, but it's, you know, the last page of history on almost any event is very rarely written. It's a vast canvas, and we have found that true on this, as it was on our previous book on the 9/11 attacks, when there was blanket coverage, obviously. But if you sit and mine away at the information, one often finds bits of information that, when you really look at them and when you tie them in with all the other factors, they become important. One thing that may perhaps have slightly misled your listeners was the notion that you and I suggested just now that our focus was Admiral Kimmel. Well, our focus is Admiral Kimmel, but this was the commander-in-chief of the U.S. fleet in the Pacific. And that meant that we had to look at the whole canvas and look at other allegations and supposed evidence of sinister goings-on to deal with Pearl Harbor. And that we have. And the one that is embedded, really, in the American consciousness is the notion, the allegation, that President Roosevelt may have had some sort of foreknowledge of Pearl Harbor, but because he wanted to get the United States into the war, that he kept it quiet, sat on it, and allowed Pearl Harbor to be attacked with all the tragedy that came from that. And we found that was completely baseless. There is absolutely no evidence, in fact, rather the contrary, that the president or the man he wanted to be allied to, Prime Minister Winston Churchill of England, had any foreknowledge at all.
I'm glad you researched that, because I've heard that. I've actually read that. And you say it's absolutely baseless.
Yes, well, one of the things we did, and we've been very lucky in that we've been able to do research not only in the American archives, but archives in the Netherlands and in the UK as well. But in British government archives, we found a report written for Prime Minister Churchill after the war, a handwritten report detailing the intelligence that the British had available to them at the time of the Pearl Harbor attack. And in fact, rather than the British having had more intelligence of Japanese movements from signals intelligence, which is what has always been rumored, they in fact had far less than the Americans. So there was no quiet backdoor conversation between Churchill and Roosevelt that we have ever been able to locate, and there is no evidence that such a conversation or such manipulation took place.
That's a fantastic bit of information explored in this book. Again, listeners joining us a little late, the title is A Matter of Honor, Pearl Harbor, Betrayal, Blame, and a Family's Quest for Justice. Why the title, Anthony Summers, A Matter of Honor? His family, the Admiral's family, worked for years and years and years trying to clear his name, didn't they?
Well, and so did the Admiral himself until his death in 1968. We've just been talking about what information U.S. And British intelligence may have had. What we haven't touched on yet is goes right to the reason of why this was putting the blame on Admiral Kimmel was a huge injustice. U.S. intelligence clearly had a great deal of information before Pearl Harbor that should have been shared with the guys at the sharp end, in this case Admiral Kimmel, that would have indicated to him that there was a risk to Pearl Harbor. Now, we found that it's always been known that there was some information that was not shared with the Admiral. We found more evidence, and it is really that the story is an indication that just as with the 9/11 attacks, there was a systemic failure of U.S. intelligence. Vital information, in some cases, never even made it to the top at U.S. headquarters in Washington. It just got filed and forgotten, and it was information that, had it been known to Admiral Kimmel in Pearl Harbor, in Hawaii, would have alerted him to the fact that he needed to take certain measures and that there was a real risk to his fleet.
I want to talk specifically about a couple of those things. We need to take a quick break here. We'll pick up our conversation, listeners. Folks, this sounds like a thriller, right? And this book reads like a thriller. You have to pinch yourself every once in a while to realize that it's all true. We'll pick up our conversation with Anthony Summers and Robin Swan here on It's Your Turn on WISR right after these words. We are speaking with physical medicine and rehabilitation specialist Dr. Edward Reedy from Tri Rivers Surgical. Dr. Reedy, what types of neurological conditions do you treat?
We would often see patients with simple neurologic conditions such as carpal tunnel syndrome or pinched nerves of the arm, and we'll occasionally see patients with more serious neurologic disorders such as a stroke or brain injury. The treatment for the more serious aspects of these usually involves a fair amount of testing and often hospitalization, whereas the treatment for the more simpler neurologic disorders is usually done on an outpatient basis with medications to fight inflammation and occasionally simple surgical procedures.
To learn more, call Tri Rivers Surgical at their new office near the Clearview Mall in Butler, toll free 866-874-7483. That number again is 866-874-7483.
That frightening sound is one we hear quite often throughout the day. Our heart quickens and immediately we wonder what happened. A medical emergency can be frightening. Every tick of the clock crucial. And that's why Butler Ambulance Service is dedicated to be there with every ounce of care possible. Butler Ambulance Service is within minutes of providing you or a loved one with treatment and transportation. Call 282-9595 to find out more. Butler Ambulance Service is a phone call away from serving you.
Welcome back, listeners. We're in a fabulous conversation here on It's Your Turn today with the co-authors of a new book on Pearl Harbor. The title is A Matter of Honor. Our guests are Anthony Summers and Robin Swan. My name is Dave Malarkey. We were talking before the break. Anthony, I think I was chatting with you about some of this information that should have been shared with Admiral Kimmel at Pearl. One of the tidbits that I found in your book is the fact that the Navy intelligence had hard evidence that new technology made it possible to drop airborne torpedoes in water as shallow as the water is at Pearl, but nobody told him. Is that what hit the Arizona and the Nevada and the Oklahoma? Was it these airborne torpedoes that they weren't expecting?
Well, not the Arizona, because the Arizona was hit with a bomb.
Okay.
This was the terrible episode in which the Arizona was destroyed, and as many as 1,000 of the 2,000-plus casualties at Pearl Harbor were suffered on the Arizona. But let me take let Robin take that question. It is crucial information about the perfection of the aerial torpedo and what could be done with it that was not passed to Admiral Kimmel.
Well, only this past year we found in files in the National Archives that a secret report by an American naval attaché stationed with the British had supplied information, including a map that showed that the British had perfected this aerial-borne torpedo technology and were able to successfully drop bombs in waters as shallow as some 24 feet, while the water at Pearl was 45 feet. This information came into Washington in February of 1941, and it sat in a drawer in the Office of Naval Intelligence until last year. It was never passed to the Chief of Naval Operations, Harold Stark, who was desperate for this kind of intelligence, and it was certainly never passed to Admiral Kimmel. Now, if that information had been made available to those two men, the decisions we know that they made after that, during the months right before the attack, decisions about placing torpedo nets at Pearl, even though it would have been grossly inconvenient to the movements of the fleet, decisions about spacing, berthing, key decisions may well have been very, very different.
There's one other thing I want to explore that I found very intriguing. And folks, believe me, there's so much. This is an incredibly detailed book, 500 pages with a great index, too, by the way. But talk a little bit, if you will, about the code-breaking system known as MAGIC. I'd never heard of this. I've read quite extensively about the European code-breaking and Enigma, the Enigma machines, and Alan Turing, and so on and so forth. I didn't know anything about MAGIC. What was this all about, and why was some key naval officers keeping mum after Pearl because of this?
Well, MAGIC has been known about. MAGIC was the jumbo name for the breaking of enemy codes. In particular, the Purple Code had been broken. This was the high-level diplomatic code. The Americans were able to read the messages sent to their senior diplomats abroad. MAGIC by name and MAGIC in fact, because it was an extraordinary, it offered U.S. intelligence and U.S. politicians a huge advantage. They were looking in, as it were, at the cards of the potential enemy before those cards were played. The information, however, was poorly handled. It was treated as such a big secret, and of course it had to be a secret. It was treated as such a secret that it was initially confined to be read by only about 10 people and read in an unsatisfactory way. The information was given to them and then snatched away just in case it was found lying around and the secret about the secret got out. And the person who could have benefited again from such information and the way that the nations were moving towards logjam to war never got to Admiral Kimmel in the Pacific. But there were other things from U.S. intelligence were gathering that also didn't reach him. It wasn't part of MAGIC, but warnings came through various intelligence channels indicating that Pearl Harbor specifically might be a likely target, and that information was not shared with the admiral or with the army in Hawaii.
Well, then, what exactly was Admiral Kimmel accused of? Just some vague dereliction or not paying attention, or was he actually accused of anything specific?
Well, the charges were rather vague. Kimmel was supposed to command by mutual cooperation with the army commander in Hawaii, General Short, and in spite of the fact that the evidence said that the two men actually cooperated in exemplary fashion, the investigations managed to suggest that they didn't know enough about each other's operations. The other charge made was that Kimmel's long-range reconnaissance planes were not flying out. Well, it had been known all year that Kimmel did not have enough planes to
to fly a 360-degree reconnaissance at Pearl Harbor, and he had been begging for sufficient planes to do so. They never arrived. To adequately defend Pearl, therefore, he would have had to have very good intelligence on a potential threat to Pearl. He did not have this. He could not expend his limited aircraft in a fruitless search day after day after day. You cannot do that. You cannot keep men on general quarters day after day after day. So the charges against Kimmel were really tragically unjust.
Look, crucially put, I mean, very, very simply put, he was made a scapegoat, and the Army commander in chief in Hawaii was similarly made a scapegoat. Why? Well, surprise, surprise, the buck was being passed. Just to quote from two modern messages that we found in the correspondence, in the 1980s, a special assistant to the Secretary of the Navy for Intelligence wrote that my predisposition, in quotes, would be to reinstate Kimmel to his original four-star rank, because Kimmel and Short were, this is a quote, given the character of the times and the character of President Roosevelt, quote, necessary scapegoats. And in 2002, after Congress had voted for the admiral and the general to be reinstated to their original ranks, another official reported to Deputy Secretary of Defense Wolfowitz, it is clear that others share at least as much, and in my opinion, even greater responsibility for the magnitude of the defeat at Pearl Harbor. But they still have not been restored to their former rank, and we were at the unveiling of a statue in Kentucky just a couple of days ago, a statue of Admiral Kimmel put up by the people of his hometown. He was born in Henderson, Kentucky. And the family are hoping, you asked about the family just now, they're hoping against hope that at last he'll be restored posthumously to his full rank, which is the only way now that he can, his reputation and his honor can be restored.
Listeners, did you know about this? This is such an incredible story. I didn't know anything about it. It's a wonderful book, A Matter of Honor. Let me ask you one final question, folks. Our guests, Anthony Summers and Robin Swan, they're not only New York Times best-selling co-authors of this book, they're also married, and they live in the Republic of Ireland, the land of my ancestors, by the way, as you might well have guessed, with the last name of Malarkey. So you work together.
We chuckled.
I'm sure you did. A lot of people say that I, you know, took that name because of the business I'm in. I said, no, it's a good Irish name and a real one. You can ask me, Daw, that's for sure. But tell me a little bit about working together. That's got to be kind of tough. I mean, you guys were in intensive research for years and years and years. Of course, you've done this before. I guess you know how to do it, huh, without getting in each other's nerves.
Oh, I don't know about that. you weren't here 20 minutes ago, Dave. This kind of research takes incredible discipline. And we like to think that every time we do a book, we're getting a little bit better at using the skills we learn. And we also feel privileged to do this kind of work. We've had an opportunity to write about some of the biggest and most important stories of this past century, and that is a privilege, and one is, has an obligation to try to get it as right as possible, and write it as well as possible so that people can understand the world around them, and that's what we hope we've done with A Matter of Honor.
Of course, there is strife between any pair of people trying to write a book together, arguing about facts and so on. But that's also an advantage because you play mental ping pong and you move things forward by thinking aloud together. And it's worked for us for a long time, and may it continue.
Just mentioning a couple of the previous books of our guests, The 11th Day, The Full Story of 9/11, and Osama Bin Laden, The Arrogance of Power, The Secret World of Richard Nixon, and many other critically acclaimed books. Our guests, co-authors Anthony Summers and Robin Swan, authors of this meticulously documented account of Pearl Harbor that really does read like a thriller. The title is A Matter of Honor, Pearl Harbor, Betrayal, Blame, and a Family's Quest for Justice. Anthony Summers, Robin Swan, thanks so much for your time. I enjoyed the conversation immensely.
So did we. Thank you.
Okay, so long now.
Thanks, Dave. Bye-bye.
I want to tell you, that's, I kind of have to take a deep breath after talking with those two. What a story, huh? I didn't know anything about this. I knew about Pearl, obviously, a few details, seen some films, but I had no idea that the Admiral, the head of the Pacific Fleet, was unjustly blamed for this and drummed out of the Navy, for goodness sakes. Unbelievable, huh? A Matter of Honor. And they stumbled across it only by accident while they were investigating 9/11 and the hunt for Osama bin Laden, which was their previous book. By the way, I think that's the one that they were finalists for the Pulitzer Prize. Where do I check the back end flap here? Yeah, finalists for the Pulitzer Prize for History. For their book on the 11th day, on the 9/11 attacks. The title of that is The 11th Day, in case you're looking for it. The 11th Day. They've also done biographies of President Nixon, FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover, Frank Sinatra, Marilyn Monroe, and a much praised investigation of the assassination of President Kennedy. How about that? Robin Swan, early in her career, before she was married to Anthony Summers, was a... Oh, this is interesting. She was a researcher for Jean Le Carré, a great writer of spy novels and mysteries. Jean Le Carré. Well, anyway, great to... as I mentioned earlier on the program today, in case you weren't with us, this couple, they were on national TV this past weekend. There were some specials on Pearl Harbor. And on a wing and a prayer, so to speak, I tried to, I really wanted to talk with them. I didn't have much hope, but at the last minute, I was able to hook up with them. So, good stuff. Mm. A Matter of Honor. Well, we have more to come on the It's Your Turn program today. And by the way, I can't thank the folks enough that talked earlier on the program today. We were looking for some local memories of people who were around, first of all, in 1941 and were old enough to have even a slight memory. And we had many, many people call earlier with memories of Pearl Harbor and how they found out about it and what happened the next day and was there school and so on. It's good stuff. And also a final thank you to the good folks at Veterans of Foreign Wars Post 249. Commander down there, Floyd Case, who was involved in setting up that wonderful Pearl Harbor Remembrance Day program yesterday at Diamond Park. I think there's some nice photographs. Somebody told me on the front page of the Butler Eagle today about that, and I was extremely honored to serve as MC for that program. And Butler County Veteran Services, John Cyprian, involved in it as well. Daniel Zarnick was the guest speaker, World War II veteran, also served in the Korean War. How about that? Was on Utah Beach, Normandy, World War II, later Battle of the Bulge. He shared some of his experiences yesterday. It was a wonderful program yesterday during the noon hour. And, of course, since I was up there, I have to thank again Tyler Friel, my colleague here, who sat in for me on the program yesterday. We still have more to come. I'm going to shift gears a little bit here today, but still most appropriate. It doesn't have anything to do with Pearl Harbor Day. But college students are going to be coming home for vacation pretty soon for a holiday break, right? We'll be getting some advice for college students and their parents, actually, from career coach Vera Allen on how to pave the way to a career while still in school. Some things, quite a few things, that students ought to be doing while they're in school, not waiting until they're finished and then trying to get a job. So we'll be chatting with her in just a couple of minutes here on the program. One of our sponsors, Miller's Quality Meats, Main Street in downtown Butler, where, folks, the time is running out to place your order for your Christmas ham and turkey from Miller's Meats, 142 North Main Street, downtown Butler. The deadline for placing your order is December 14th, which is Wednesday of next week. So get them in. They've got some absolutely mouth-watering stuff. Their spiral-sliced honey-glazed ham is just absolutely, I mean, it's mouth-watering. I've had it. $4.99 a pound, by the way. Must place your order by 12:14. They have other types, too, of hams and turkey breast and tavern ham and everything, but that spiral-sliced honey glaze, they do all that right there, by the way, the glazing and everything right there. You can also give a holiday gift box. They have a number of varieties of that at Miller's Meats. Again, you must place an order by 12:14. That's next Wednesday. Give a holiday gift box of various varieties of steaks, whether you want filet or Delmonico or boneless strip. Also, a gift box of smoked meat, Miller's Quality Meat Specialties, assorted. Very nice. Wonderful gift. For the month of December, their hours are Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 6:30 p.m., Saturday, 8 to 4. They're closed on Sundays. Miller's Quality Meats, 142 North Main Street, downtown Butler. They're right next to Cummings Candy and Coffee Shop. Miller's Quality Meats.
Do you have missing teeth or wear dentures? You may have heard of or are considering dental implants. Hi, this is Dr. Bob Todd of Butler Smiles Dental Care. There are many options available with dental implants, and making the right choice can be confusing. I have been placing dental implants since 2004, both full-size traditional implants and small diameter or mini dental implants. There are indications for both, but more and more we are using mini dental implants in a variety of innovative ways. They are easier to place, causing less discomfort, are less costly, and can frequently be used immediately after placement, allowing you to get back to eating the foods you like or smiling again right away. Traditional implants typically have a 4-month healing time before they can be used. I invite you to call our office at 282-7774 to schedule a free consultation to see if mini dental implants are the right solution for your dental problems, or visit us on the web at butlersmiles.com.
Welcome, listeners. We're going to be giving some advice today. We're going to be getting some advice, actually, for college students and their parents about paving your way to a career. Our guest visits with us by telephone. She is career coach Vera Teller, and she's the author of a new book entitled Check It Off. First of all, Dr. Teller, nice to meet you. Nice to have you with us for a few minutes here today.
Yes, thank you for having me.
I'm intrigued by you're talking about college students have to prepare for a career each year, because, you know, most of us think, well, that's something that you do kind of toward the end of your college career, maybe even in your senior year. You say that's way too late.
You know, that's so true. So many books on the market are written for after college, or your senior year when you're ready to graduate.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of programs in the college, in the university, just don't really help the student prepare or get ready for that career. So my book says, you know what, why don't we put a little bit of responsibility on the student and have them kind of like look at their career as they're going along in college. So there's a list of tasks to do in your freshman year or your first year, all the way through to graduation.
Now, there are some folks, maybe even some college students, who may be listening to us and saying, well, you know, can I just have some fun while I'm in college too? Do I have to worry about the preparing for a career, getting a job the first semester of my freshman year? For goodness sakes, can't I have a little fun?
Actually, I write about that in the book as well, and I say that the activities that they normally do, why don't we just take a look at those and kind of like just turn them around just a little bit, and you'll be surprised at what you already do, how that can help you. And let me give you two examples.
Mm-hmm.
One is networking. Networking is really important in today's day and age. And so students go to concerts, they meet with friends, they don't realize that that is networking. And so it's kind of like, let's start taking the activities that we normally do and just start educating the student that, you know what, the people that I meet today can really help me once I graduate. Another example is jobs. Like, most students have either part-time jobs or full-time jobs. And the jobs usually don't correlate to a career that they're interested in.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, if you're interested in becoming an accountant, why not get a part-time job in an accounting firm? Or if you're interested in becoming, you know, a lawyer, why not, you know, start looking at where can I get a part-time job that I can relate or meet some type of, you know, lawyers? And so it's kind of like turning around what we normally do, but start looking at it as far as how can I take advantage of the activities that I do in college that will prepare me or help me when I graduate. And then don't forget, too, college is kind of like a discovery. We might think we want to be an accountant, but when we start, you know, kind of like participating in those type of activities, we may say, you know what, this career is not really for me.
Mm-hmm.
And so why wait until you graduate and you're into becoming an accountant when you can kind of figure that out along the way?
That's very, very important advice. I know that certainly happened to me. I changed majors just over a year or so into my undergraduate years, and a lot of my friends did too. And it's especially important, I think, and I've been reading about, you know, we've seen the loss of jobs here in the United States in some particular sectors, and forecasters are now predicting, this is kind of scary, forecasters are predicting that one-third of today's jobs, one-third, will be taken over by robots in the next 10 to 20 years. So if you're a college student and thinking about a career, you got to be aware of this.
Yes, I address that as well. It's kind of like, what do you want to do? And also, what are the jobs out there in the future that you need to prepare for? And so that's another good example of something that you could do while you're in college. So, for example, if you have a paper that you have to write, why not take that as a topic? What are some of the jobs that will be available 5-10 years from now? So you're using your college courses to actually help you prepare. Instead of just writing a paper about anything, why not take that opportunity to do some research that will actually benefit you? So what I'm telling you, and like what I said before, is like, it's not anything that we need to do differently. I mean, not anything that we have to add to our schedules. It's taking advantage of the things that we already have to do, but taking a look at it just a little bit differently.
We're talking for listeners who may have joined us a little bit late on this segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR. My name is Dave Malarkey. Our guest visits with us by telephone. She is Dr. Vera Teller, career coach, and for the purposes of our discussion today, the author of a new book entitled Check It Off, Paving Your Way Through College to a Career. There are lots of career advice books out there, Dr. Teller. I'm not telling you anything. Yours is a little bit different because you actually give specific advice, do you not, about the processes that you should be taking each year of college, from freshman, sophomore, junior, senior year.
Right, and it's actually, these are the things that you need to look at your first year of college all the way through to your senior year or your fifth year. A lot of students take 5 years to complete college. And it's actually like a checklist. These are the things that you should be doing, and you kind of go through it and you check it off
mm-hmm.
when you've completed it. So it gives you that sense that you have some goals for the freshman year. These are the goals or the tasks that I want to complete, and have I completed them? And I teach at the university, and many students do not visit, like, for example, the Career Center. And most colleges have a Career Center. And the Career Center has so many resources for the college student. And so why wait until the third year or the fourth year to visit your career center when you could be starting to make that relationship when you're a freshman? Career fairs is another example. There are so many career fairs that take place at a college campus, and most students wait until their senior year to attend. And it's like, why not start attending when you're a freshman to kind of like get the lay of the land and figure out what is this all about and how I can prepare now for when I really need to attend a career fair when I'm a senior. So there are a lot of things that students can do while they're going through college and not wait until after or once they graduate, because it's daunting out there when you're trying to look for a job and you feel like you're not prepared or you don't have prospects and you really don't know how to pursue the job search. It's kind of like, why not start slowly and then build momentum as you're going through college?
We have to take a short break, listeners. We have a few more minutes, fortunately, that we're able to talk with Dr. Vera Teller about Check It Off. And when we come back in just a minute or so here, there's some advice for parents in this book, too, that might be particularly important as we head into semester break time. So we'll pick up our conversation with Vera Teller here on It's Your Turn on WISR right after these words.
Hop the bus, leave the driving up to us.
The bus.
We're going your way, getting there stops here. Just hop the bus, easy and economical. Just hop the bus. No car, no problem. The bus will get you there, 'cause that's what we do.
Hop the bus,
leave the driving up to us.
The bus.
We're going your way.
Welcome back. My name is Dave Malarkey. On this segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR, we're talking with expert career coach Vera Teller. Dr. Teller has authored a book entitled Check It Off, Paving Your Way Through College to Career. And as she mentioned in the first part of our conversation, actually checklists where you can check it off. I mentioned before the break, Dr. Teller, that you have advice for parents in your book as well. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, let me start saying that the reason why I was interested in writing this book is because of a personal experience with my daughter. My daughter basically went to one of the top national colleges, and at the end, when she graduated, basically fell into a deep depression because she had no plans or direction for the future. And it took me, my husband and myself, a lot of time and resources and doctors to get her on her feet and get her moving towards a career. And so that's my advice for parents, is to start to recognize that we can help our child as they're going through their college careers by basically giving them advice and offering, you know, telling them, have you visited, you know, just asking questions. Have you visited the career center? Or, you know, what is your field of interest? And what have you done, basically, to pursue that? You know, just to figure out, is this something that you really want to do? As you mentioned, that you graduated in a field that basically you're not in. Many students do that. Many people do that. They'll graduate in one field and they'll basically pursue a career in another field. But that doesn't mean that you don't graduate. That means that you basically go through the process, and it's a learning process, right? It's kind of like I describe in my book, like a river flowing. We kind of try to find our path, our
mm-hmm.
way.
Mm-hmm.
And that happened with my daughter, too. You know, she started out in one area and then kind of like narrowed her interests until she found the career that she was interested in to pursue. And so we all do that. And I want to preface that we can help our child basically find their way and not to give up. The statistic for students not graduating college and not completing the 4 or 5 years is pretty high.
It is.
And so this is why I wrote the book, to try to help help the students get through this.
Sometimes you just need a little bit of a kick in the pants, quite frankly, to get going. By the way, I want to be clear on one point. I may have not been clear about my experience. I did start out majoring in another field, but fortunately found out a year or so in that I was in the wrong place, and I did end up majoring in broadcast journalism. So I am in the field in which I majored, although I didn't start out there. By the way, even a quick kick in the pants sometimes can be a big thing. I know there was one point in my undergraduate career where, it all started with being a little over-exuberant in celebrating a big win by the football team. It was over UCLA, by the way. And my quality point average just nosedived that quarter. And I could have used a kick in the pants right there. Said, hey, get it together. Because it took me about a year and a half to get my cumulative average back up again after that silly experience.
Yeah, I hear you.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the new modern tools that were not available when many of us were in undergraduate school. There are modern tools. There are things like, we have LinkedIn today. That's relatively new for people looking for job information, right?
You know, that I'm glad that you brought that up, because we do teach LinkedIn now as far as a social networking tool to use in college. And, you know, we start them off in college using that tool, and many students don't know about that. We also talk about the pictures and the things that you're doing, that a lot of young kids are doing on social media that they should not be doing, and they need to start realizing that and focusing on that, because that can follow you, as you know, posting pictures that you shouldn't be posting, or saying things that you shouldn't be saying on Facebook, different types of social media. So I do talk about that a lot. Also, once you set up a LinkedIn account, which is basically the business social networking site, when you set up that LinkedIn account, is to start thinking about all the people that you do meet at just different social events, and these could be your friends of friends, that you want to basically start connecting with using LinkedIn, and not waiting until you're a senior.
Mm-hmm.
And so that you feel like you are starting slowly to build your network, so that once you graduate, you can actually use your network to help you get a job. In fact, our first job is usually procured or secured by people that we know, that could be friends of our parents, friends of friends, or just in our first social network. So that's why it's very important to use LinkedIn. And there are also a lot of other software tools that are out there to help the student in planning. So, for example, using Excel as far as planning and your worksheet, and I talk about that in the book as well. It's kind of like you need to start writing things down and basically have some goals, because if you don't have goals, you're not going anywhere. You want to basically start thinking about, these are the things that I need to do, and then make time to actually complete them.
We're talking with Dr. Vera Teller, career coach. By the way, you mentioned being careful about what you post on social media. I have read that human resources people, the people who do the hiring at companies, they look at that almost every time now. They check a person's record, what they've posted on some of these social media sites, and if there's bad stuff on there, or even marginal stuff, that's a big downgrade.
Yeah, many companies actually look at what's out there about you, and we talk about that as far as making sure that you clean up all of your social media before, you know, you start looking for a job. But at the same time, you want to be, you know, pretty conservative when you're going through college, what you post on, you know, Facebook and different things like that. So it's just being aware that companies do look at this and that you need to be very careful as far as what you post. It's very competitive out there. So getting a job and, you know, your first job and also getting future jobs, it's competitive. And so you want to make sure that you put yourself in the best possible position to get your first job and also to get future jobs.
Are there modern tools to help you update your resume? Because, again, that's in some cases the only thing that a human resources person will look at. And if you don't pass that test, you're not even going to get an interview.
That's true. You know what? I like to, and we teach writing, how to write a resume, and we just use normal Microsoft Word.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty much still something that you have to take control over. You can, and I think that in the future we're going to be using more of LinkedIn as far as posting our resume there. We're beginning to see that now. So you'll be putting all of your information, like your resume information, on LinkedIn. And I think that most companies will basically just use LinkedIn. But right now we're in that phase where a resume is still needed. Most companies, you basically file the resume online or complete a resume online. But I always advise that when you're going for an interview that you bring a hard copy of your resume as well.
Good advice.
So that the person has it in front of them and you can refer to it. So, yes, there are tools, but old-fashioned also works.
Dr. Vera Teller has a diverse career, folks. Her experience includes business management, operations, consulting, and as she mentioned, she's currently a lecturer in the College of Business Administration and Public Policy at California State University in Dominguez Hills, California. She's the author of Check It Off, Paving Your Way Through College, Making the Most of Each Year of College, Essential to Starting a Strong Career. Dr. Teller, thanks for being with us today. By the way, is your book available at the normal places we buy books? It's already available, right?
It's already out there. It's Amazon.com, and also you can check my website, VeraTeller.com.
Thanks, Dr. Teller. Nice to talk with you today.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay. So long now.
Bye.
Midday lottery numbers for you today. The pick 2 is 15-1-5. The pick 3 is 392. The pick 4, 9580. The pick 5, 60526. The wild for each of those is 4. The treasure hunt, 3, 10, 19, 26, and 30. Estimated jackpot for tomorrow's treasure hunt is $50,000.
Moving from my home of 50 years was a little scary, but I wasn't safe at home anymore, and my daughter with her busy life, children and grandchildren, it wasn't fair for me to expect so much from her.
We looked together to find a new home and discovered New Haven Court at Clearview.
What made the difference were the employees and the residents we met. The residents said it was a great place to live.
New Haven Court at Clearview, a great place to live because it's a great place to work. 888-261-5753 or visit IntegraCare.com.
Well, we thank our guests today, earlier on the program, of course. Thank you, folks. Great stories and memories of Pearl Harbor Day and the aftermath here in our area. Also, a tremendous opportunity to chat with Anthony Summers and Robin Swan today. I'm still getting over that conversation. And, of course, just chatting with Vera there past couple of minutes. Coming up on tomorrow's program, we've done quite a bit this week about Pearl Harbor, and we told you we were going to do that, 75th anniversary after all. We're going to wrap up not specifically talking about Pearl, but actually, if you have a veteran in your family, if you know a veteran, there's a wonderful thing called the Veterans History Project. Bruce Decker has been involved with that here in our area for, I think now about a year, maybe a year and a half. He's going to chat with us tomorrow. They want to know your story, folks. Well, let's put it this way. Your family wants to know your story. You can leave your story of what you did in the service. You don't have to be in combat. Didn't have to be overseas. Your story as a veteran. And we'll tell you how to do that. Bruce Decker helps people do that. I'm looking forward to chatting with him again. I haven't seen Bruce in a while. Also, tomorrow, among other things, we'll talk about, this is fascinating, one of the dangers of these video games you see advertised on TV. Young people play them a lot.